Hello, my name is Tim Law with Success Learning Systems, and today I will be interviewing Master Sergeant Scott Swank here in York, Pennsylvania. Master Sergeant Swank has a passion and skill set for our great nation as a National Guard recruiter and many other additional specialties. What he has been involved with is the military for a number of years, and also, just as importantly, he's been a good friend for the last several years. So, Scott, what got you started on this pathway of helping others as you do?
Well, Tim, as a career educator like yourself, I take great pride and passion in helping young people make life goals and decisions based upon facts. And I began my military career as an infantry soldier, attended many schools, and came back. Before I joined the military, I received a degree in education from Mansfield University. So I had a background in education before I joined the military, and I continued that when I came off active duty as a teacher in a local school district here in Northeastern School District. And then I went back into the National Guard full-time as a recruiter and used my teaching skills and understanding what young people wanted or needed in their lives to become a successful production recruiter with the National Guard.
Well, how long were you involved as a – let me just jump back to your teaching experience for a second, Scott. How long were you involved as far as the teaching was concerned?
Well, I was a teacher in social studies, alternative ed, and did some work with homebound students because of pregnancy or injury issues from 1989 until about 1996. And I also, at that time, was the varsity baseball coach, assistant cross-country coach, and assistant varsity swim coach. And I coached swimming with their age group programs, you know, kids learning how to swim all the way up to high school. And I also, after I left Northeastern, I carried that on. Mr. Dick Geyer, the coach at Suburban, asked me to help with his program, and I worked with them.
From he's a local legend. That man is incredible.
Yeah, he's a super, super guy. I worked with Mr. Geyer's program from 1998 until 2005.
Okay.
I've been in recruiting. I started as a some of the listeners won't understand the rank structure, but I started as a E5 sergeant and worked my way up to right now a master sergeant, E8. I'm in charge of 16 other production recruiters in the York, Lancaster, and Harrisburg area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And obviously, you've been involved in both education as well as the military. Certainly, in a scenario where you're actually mentoring a lot of young people and everything. And this particular passion, as far as the National Guard recruiting and that type of thing, why has that become so important to you?
Well, Tim, there's a lot of different reasons for it. Of course, we live in the greatest nation on earth.
Absolutely. No question about it.
We have, it's my philosophy that you can't be a bystander in the game of life. You got to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I used my military experience to kind of step outside my comfort zone. I went to college and that was great. And I saw a need for something else in my life, something bigger than myself.
Well, and you were also a ranger as well. Is that right, Scott?
Yes, sir, I am.
Talk about stepping out of your comfort zone.
the
training and things you guys went through, my goodness.
Right. I also went to airborne school and jungle school and live fire schools to learn how to call and attack helicopters, close air support with fighter planes and that type of thing. So I was early on in my career on the cutting edge of the battlefield scenario. It's nice to be able to express that to the younger kids to find out, you know, if the military is for them. And it's not for everybody, but the National Guard is a little bit different than going on active duty of course, mm-hmm. you can get activated being in the National Guard, or you can use the National Guard as a stepping stone to go into an active component. And that's what I try to explain to a lot of kids. It's a nice tool to use to get yourself, acclimated to the military. Because with mm-hmm. the National Guard, you can go away, get the basic training and the skill training that you would like in up to 200 different career occupations, and then you can come back to your neighborhood and do that 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks out of the year, and then use the money that the PA Guard gives you to go to college. And right now, depending on how well you do on your exams and what jobs you pick, you could get as much as $15,000 a year to go to college.
Wow, certainly a significant amount, that's for sure.
Right, and that's that takes place because of the governor. The governor sees that the soldiers have made commitments to the state, and he then in turn says, hey, for what you've done, here's our gratitude is to help, pay for your education. And there's other programs as well. There's they're in the process now of also allowing spouses and family members to use those educational benefits if the soldier doesn't want to or if the soldier doesn't have the need to be able to pass those to the family.
Oh, also, that's a great advantage.
Yes, it is. And there's also programs where you can, do civilian-learned educational programs called CLEP, where if you've taken you're fluent in Spanish or German, you can CLEP out of those classes, or you can become an instructor through the military. There's a lot of really great programs that are offered, and it's, like I said before, a nice way to get a taste of the military without giving up all of your, rights, where you have to go away to a duty station for 4 years. And that's mm-hmm. what I try to explain to the educators, and it's a little bit easier for me, being a former educator, to go mm-hmm. into a school and explain to the principal, hey, we're not here to, capture your students and take them away and put them into a situation where they're gone for 3, 4, 5, 6 years. Our goal is to get them trained so that they can accomplish a military mission if need be, and then bring them back to the community and allow them to use the educational benefits or take that skill training and use it in the civilian sector. A good example of that is we have a unit right here in New York that flies the unmanned aerial vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
That training is invaluable in the civilian sector. There's a corporation down in Hunt Valley, Maryland called AAI, and they build and they train soldiers all over the world to fly their planes. These guys actually go to school to learn how to repair and fly those vehicles. So AAI, when they come back, immediately want to interview them to see if they're a fit for their corporation. And we
wow.
have about probably 8 soldiers or more that are currently working for them and continuing their military career, but using what they've learned with the military to have a civilian career as well.
And obviously, that's going to be a very well-paying position for them if they are able to make the grade as far as working for that company. Would that be correct?
Yes, I believe they start out around $50,000 at
mm-hmm.
AAI,
mm-hmm.
and then it goes up from there. And of course, they get other perks as well. They kind of what we call a double dip if they're doing their military. AAI will
mm-hmm.
cover them while they're gone. And then there's other corporations right local here as well that have the same type of programs, or they can use people with military experience. There's a corporation near Spring Grove called BAE Systems.
Mm-hmm.
It's a British-owned but American-run corporation, and they make various military vehicles, and they need people that understand how they operate or can fix them in order to sell their product. And there's a couple other ones too, Gishner's Fasteners over in Red Line. They're another military-run
mm-hmm.
organization that look for people with military skills in their corporations. So then one of the nice things I think about the military training that you can get with the National Guard is it not only does it allow the student soldier to continue his education or her education, but it also is an asset to employers because employers look at the military training that people have had as leadership ability within the corporation, and also they understand they're going to get a person that's got a little more discipline than the normal
mm-hmm.
employee.
Sure. Sure, and certainly in this day and age, the lack of self-discipline because of any number of variety of cultural factors is certainly these individuals that get your program and everything, they certainly have to have a major advantage over, let's say, the average civilian person that, for whatever number of reasons, comes in rather undisciplined compared to, some of the individuals you guys are turning out.
Right, that's true. It's a nice opportunity, and when I talk to parents, educators, and potential soldiers, I want to let them know up front that we're not the Army, we're not the Marine Corps, we're not the Navy, and we don't want to be. We're a different type of animal where you can serve your country and your community, and at the same time, you can use programs that we have to go to college for free, get a job skill, in some cases get outstanding bonus money, have a sense of pride, exhibit Army values, respect, selfless service. It's kind of the ultimate part-time job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the impression I'm also getting, too, is that, students come back to the community and are able to create, a higher value locally because of going through everything that you guys have actually done for them.
Right. Well, that's one of the keys, I think, to the program itself is the things that you get you can't put a price tag on.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can put a price tag on the training. You can put a price tag on the bonus money and how much money you're going to get for college, but you can't put a price tag on the values that you get, the sense of loyalty, honor, duty that the soldier exudes after they've done their training or during their training. It's sort of a win-win situation.
Well, certainly all those intangibles, as you describe them, would certainly make a difference as far as their, futures, not only as far as themselves, but certainly as far as, raising a family and that kind of thing, because they're going to expect more, have higher expectations for their, family and children and everything, which in turn, is kind of a momentum effect as far as, society in as a whole is concerned.
Yes, and that you bring that up, it's interesting because in my 10 plus years in recruiting, I've recruited probably nearly 200 citizen soldiers into the National Guard, and I've seen them grow and become community leaders, officers within the National Guard, high-ranking NCOs, and seen them go to college, get college degrees. I've seen them deploy, and they've sent me emails thanking me, hey, thanks for what you did for me. And, I tell them, look, you did it for yourself. I just helped guide you in the right direction.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
I think that's the biggest high, if you will, of my job is allowing the person to become more of a asset to themselves, the community, and the Army National Guard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, it certainly sounds like turning out some, phenomenal people, that's for sure. Scott, I was wondering if you could give our listeners, let's say it's a family that, where the son or daughter may be interested as far as approaching the National Guard, as far as, coming into it, two or three useful tips that they could do now that would, help them, as far as understanding and or accessing the opportunity that the National Guard presents.
Okay. Well, obviously the first is they need to maintain a impeccable police record. the military, they do moral waivers, but it's a little bit harder to get the kind of job with the kind of security clearance that you need if you have law violations.
So basically, what you're saying is that character does matter. Is that correct?
Yes, character does matter.
Yeah, because I know a while ago there was that delusional thought here in this country, and you know exactly what I'm referring to. Well, the character doesn't matter. It obviously it's huge. There's no question about it, because people that are going to have, you know, weapons in their hands and that type of thing, you don't really need any kind of loose cannons out there.
Right.
You guys are doing.
Right. Not just weapons and, flying planes and things like that, but, you know, confidential security equipment, mm-hmm. communications equipment requires in-depth background checks. So they have to have a good moral fiber, a good moral character. So that's the mm-hmm. first thing. The second thing is they need to be able to communicate effectively and understand some math and English in order to pass the Armed Forces Service battery test to get in. So what young people need to realize is their education is important, and they shouldn't slack in school. They should try mm-hmm. to strive for the best grades. You know, one of the pitfalls our education system runs into is the notion that, well, if you can't academically make it, maybe you could join the military and have them take care of you.
Well, that's a myth.
You know, the military is not looking for people that just squeak by in their education. They're looking for the best.
Mm-hmm.
So having a strong moral fiber and a good educational background is very important to accessing the military.
Well, I know I'm preaching to the choir on this, Scott, but certainly the days of, you know, World War I, World War II, maybe even up through Korea and Vietnam, where, you know, they were looking for large numbers of people, you know, to the grunt work or whatever, that's changed so much just because of the skill that you need with the high-level operations that are going on, that it certainly sounds like it's better to select some, smaller number but higher-quality people for what you're actually doing now.
Right. That's probably the best way to put it, that there's more sophisticated equipment. The battlefield isn't about just infantry anymore. There's a lot more involved, so you need to have people that, you know, you can trust to understand the complexity of the system. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And probably if I had to dig up a third thing that's important is understanding the commitment and understanding, you know, and not take it lightly that, mm-hmm. you know, not only do you have other people's lives in your hands, you have your own life. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it can be dangerous at times, and I think people dwell on the negative side of the military sometimes. Of course, you know, I see people protesting out in the street in downtown York, and I can respect the right that they have to do that, but as a soldier, I don't need them or want them to speak for me.
Mm-hmm,
I fully
mm-hmm.
understand the dangers of the profession that I've chosen, and that's the bottom line. When they join, they need to know that. I've heard people, you know, I've been deployed a few times, and once the deployment hits, some soldiers go south. They're like, I didn't mm-hmm. sign up for this. Well, that's one thing you have to realize. When you join any military organization, the Coast Guard, the National Guard, the Marine Corps, the Army, there is a chance that you'll be put in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where
mm-hmm.
personal courage and commitment, you know, becomes a factor. So understanding that you could be put in harm's way and having personal courage is probably one of the biggest things that parents and young men and women need to understand.
Sure, sure. It makes total sense. And do you have a particular a story from your background, Scott, with when you were deployed or whatever that stood out in your mind? And this can be whether it's a harm's way story or one where you learned a particular lesson or, you know, whatever direction you want to take this as far as something that really stood out in your mind.
Well, the one thing when I went to Bosnia, the fighting was pretty much over. There was a lot of investigating going on, and there were a lot of troops from a lot of countries there. And one thing that really I had never seen before, because I hadn't trained with a lot of troops from other countries, but we were, you know, together with the Italians, the French, the Germans, the Irish, troops from Poland, and at that time the Soviet Union had broken up, so you had Czechoslovakian, Romanian, Croatian. And one thing that I took from that was the interaction with the other soldiers. They respected the United States military men and women more than anyone else. They understood more about us than we did ourselves. They took pride in the fact that they even me as an American soldier. And to this day, my deployment was about 12 years ago. I still have troops from other countries who email me and write me, and they take a lot of pride in the fact that I serve with them, which is kind of shocking to a lot of American civilian people. Don't see that or ever understand that not only are the American soldiers comrades in arms, but the other NATO soldiers take our friendship or our training with them as a exciting thing.
And it was that's very interesting.
You know, and one of the stories that's kind of funny is the last couple of years, all the politicians and people saying that the American soldiers were not equipped to fight, and the American soldiers were under strength with weapon systems and protective armor and things like that is totally ridiculous, because I saw it firsthand. All the other countries are so underprotected with everything that they have. We are over-equipped. There might have been a few circumstances where they didn't have equipment, but, you know, you do what you have to do in a deployment situation to overcome and adapt. There was any of the deployments I've ever been on or helped people go on, I know the American soldier is well-equipped. And I thank those congressmen and senators who passed those laws and regulations, especially our local one, Todd Platt. He is a great supporter of our American soldier, and I commend them for their efforts to do that. But I've never seen us under strength as far as equipment and armor and things like that. If anything,
well, that's certainly good to know. That's for sure. And you know, a lot of times the media, as you and I have discussed before, the truth is not even you know, in the picture a lot of times, as far as the you know, being negative and denigrating to you know, this country. It's the blame America first crowd that you know, I've always wished that, you know, and again, they've got the right to say it in this great country, but I really wish some of them would take a 2-week vacation to you know, Rwanda or some of those places around the world that are really, you know, horrific places to be, that's for sure.
Right. You know, and we have to realize that as Americans, sometimes we take what we have for granted. Everyone should do a trip to a country that's been invaded or blown up or is under a rule of, you know, a dictatorship or, you know, iron fist rule, and see how lucky we are. And that's one of all the deployments I've been on. That's one thing that I always take back from those, is how lucky I am to be an American.
Totally agree. And as somebody who's also been a social studies teacher such as yourself, I think one of the biggest mistakes we make in this country of ours is to try to look at the rest of the world through our Constitution and our Bill of Rights. I think that's a huge mistake.
It's really not appropriate to do that. You have to take everything in context. America is a great democracy, but we shouldn't try to influence others to be like us if they don't want to be. You know?
Well, it's just, you know, like I say, the mistake that we kind of look at the rest of the world this way, and through our freedoms, and it just to them, to so many countries, it's just such a foreign concept. And they, you know, the idea of negotiate with a lot of other countries means basically I'm going to take whatever I can here, and you know, we're going to cut you guys right out, or you know, do whatever. And you know, it's just, you know, the idea, I guess, what we kind of almost call it fair play based on our values and standards is totally, totally foreign to so many of these other countries. You know, like we're talking about Iran with this Ahmadinejad and that type of thing, that leader over there. And, you know, he's been referred to as kind of a modern-day Hitler. And I really hope that, you know, he gets his tail feathers clipped pretty soon, because this guy is, he certainly appears to be a menace and a challenge to the safety of the world, that's for sure, certainly in that area.
Right. Well, I agree.
So, you know, well, Scott, this has been fantastic. How could people contact you to learn more about, you know, the Guard? And, you know, if you could just kind of give us some of your contact information that we could have on this, and that would be great that they could, you know, reach you.
Well, we have recruiting stations in Lancaster, York, and Harrisburg, and we base our leads or people that want to come in, they're based upon zip codes. So probably the best way for someone to get information about the National Guard or you know, no obligation, to just call me, and I can put them in contact with a recruiter that's closest to them, so that, you know, we can save taxpayers money and expenses, not have a recruiter come from Pottstown to York.
Sure.
You know, we can have a recruiter right here in York, you know, mm-hmm. come see them. And if they are out of school or in a school, they can, we have an office in the Galleria Mall on the second floor down near Sears that they can go in and ask questions. But mm-hmm. they can contact me directly if they would like at area code 717-487-1144, and that's my cell phone. It's on 24/7, and I can mm-hmm. guide them in the right direction or just answer questions. Or they can email me at Scott, that's S-C-O-T-T, dot A, dot Swank, S-W-A-N-K, at us.army.mil, M-I-L, and I can answer their questions online as well.
Okay, well, very good. This has been great, Scott. Really appreciate it. You know, you and I have been friends for a dozen years or so or longer, and, you know, I really believe you shared some wonderful information that is very, very helpful here, and I look forward to speaking with you again in the near future.
Okay, and thank you, Tim, as well, for your time.
Okay. Well, thanks, Scott. You have a great day, and we'll definitely be in touch here, sir.
Okay, Tim. You too. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye.